Hi, this is Dr. Kimberly Leonard, author of Visualizing Happiness in Every Area of Your Life and host of this podcast, Incredible Life Creator. And today, my guest is Miss Margie Olson. Good morning, Margie.
Hello.
Yeah, so nice to have you. And I'm going to just read your bio so people can know who you are.
Great.
So, Margie Olson is an executive coach and leadership team development expert with a doctorate in organization development. She delivers her coaching with practical strategies and actions for leaders and their leadership teams to build the right foundation for teamwork and productivity. Clients include companies in most industries, such as aeronautics, agriculture, financial services, fintech, healthcare, high education, insurance, manufacturing, medical device, nonprofit, retail, and more. Margie developed Top Team Accelerator, which helps senior leaders and their leadership teams build systems and habits for successful change and sustain improvements going forward. With an emphasis on the organization, Margie works with senior leaders and leadership teams to become cohesive, high-performing teams, which translates to high performance among their own teams. Well, I am so happy to have you here. So, the first thing we do on our podcast is just ask people, tell us about you, how you started out, and how you got to be doing what you're doing now.
Sure. So going all the way back, my childhood was full of a lot of change. We 22 schools by the time I graduated at 17, lots of new situations. and then I went to school, went into corporate America and spent 30 years looking around, and it reminded me a lot of my chaotic childhood. I had learned as a young person to read a room and to meet people and size things up, and figured out that I had some of that naturally as well, but also just developed that because I had to. And in organizations, it felt chaotic. It felt like we weren't in a system or a system of systems that was helping everybody be a part of it. I could see that, I could feel that. And then I went through layoffs and firings and toxic bosses, and I just wondered, who's in charge and how is it that this is happening? I also eventually became aware enough that it was impacting their b financial bottom line. So if you want to serve more clients, the way we're doing our teams and our leadership, that's not the way to do it. You can have the best product, you can have a great service, and the way people are interacting with each other is tamping down the creativity, the expertise that you hired them to do. So I went back and kind of the equivalent of picking apart the toaster or lifting the hood, I wanted to go. I went and got a doctorate in organization development to understand what do we know about organizations. And in the first 4 years are coursework. And I found out we do know organizations. There's a science to it. There's an art to it. People go and study law, they go and study medicine, they go and study organizations. So there I was learning from the people who had studied organizations for decades upon decades and thinking, okay, so we know how to learn to be a leader. We know the five or six things that are the most important aspects for being a high-performing leader. We know how to have a high-performing team. Okay, so if we know that, so all those books out there, the books that you're reading, the articles, the podcasts, the theories, the models, they're all based on a very short list of principles that are tried and true, best practices. Okay, so if we know that, then I embarked on my research journey from a dissertation to say, okay, so what are we missing? And then I learned some things in that research process, but then I've spent the last 10 years really looking in organizations, being able to apply what I learned and what I know for myself. And there are very specific things that organizations don't know to do. And the bottom line is, we are not growing leaders. Leadership is not natural, and organizations are not making it happen. They're hiring for it, but they're hiring people who don't have it. And so it has become my mission to help organizations have better leaders, which and better leadership teams, which makes everybody have a better life.
Awesome. So, just going back to the beginning, so you said, in childhood things were kind of chaotic. So you had to learn how to like read a room.
Yes.
Any, do you just do this naturally? Or is there anything you could tell people that's like, this is how you walk in and read a room?
Well, first of all, it all starts with either having a need. So if you're in a crisis, you have all these superpowers. If you're in a have a strong need to really understand what's happening, then you may go there automatically. But for every other situation that's a little bit calmer and a little more everyday, anything you can do in your life to close down some of the thinking ahead or looking back and truly being present, there's a lot of information in a room. Our brains are our partners. We don't have to quote unquote do it separate from our skills and our brain. Our brain will do it if we don't interrupt it. So there are visual cues and there are sound cues, what people are saying, people who aren't looking at each other. If you've ever noticed in a room, let's say there are five people, if you've been in a room for a while with them or you've been in a relationship, a partnership with them for a while, and you notice that they don't look at each other, there's a reason for that. Something's happening there. The other thing is, if you're talking, you might be missing what's happening around you. So it's really important to be, first of all, be comfortable going into the situation, which means be prepared. So if you go in, you're running from one meeting to the next, and you're not preparing for any of them. You're letting your calendar be full of meetings that are not getting you your goals met. But you've got the habit of having all these meetings. If you're rushing from meeting to meeting, whether it's remote or in person, and you're not coming prepared, then you don't have a chance to read the room necessarily because you're too distracted and too busy. So the preparation, anything you can do to be completely present, and then use your what you've learned about a person, notice them over time, and you might start to see that now they look a little different today. Today they're not as talkative, or they're kind of sitting back, or they had kind of a curt response to something I just said, but the last three times we talked, it wasn't a curt response. So it's really about being present. And if we just say a little bit more about being present, the way to be more fully present is anything you can do for that better life that you're looking for, which is go to therapy, do meditation, have an exercise practice, take time each day, even if it's just 5 minutes, to just be. Check out what's happening in my mind and what's happening in my body. You start to do these things and build these habits, you become much more present to what's going on around you. And pretty soon, it can start to seem so obvious. And this is what is needed. So I developed Top Team Accelerator because I'd been working with clients for so long who didn't have a format for even building their own self-awareness. So if you can't build self-awareness, and one of the greatest strategies or the greatest skills of a leader is self-awareness, if you can't build it and the company can't offer that development opportunity for you in ways that really work, then how do you develop as a leader? Once you're developing your self-awareness and you're building a high-performing team, you develop what I call team awareness. Well, you can't do that if it's not available to you. You can't do that if there are not activities to help you grow self-awareness and build team awareness. And once you do, you start to read a room pretty quickly, pretty naturally.
Cool. And is there anything you do or you would advise people to do before they're going into a meeting? Because I was just thinking of Tony Robbins. He has this something he does before he goes out on stage and just gets everybody all excited. He has his own personal
Yes.
breathing technique and everything. Is there anything that, let's say, someone is having to go from this meeting to this meeting?
Yep.
Is there anything that you tell them to do in between to kind of reset themselves?
So what I would say is rather than resetting themselves, so the more self-aware you are, the more present you are, the more you have done enough work to get into the habit of noticing yourself, that's a habit. So first of all, we have difficult things going on in life and we need to address those. And it's a habit to not do that. It's a habit to veer off and medicate or numb or deflect or whatever. Once you're really more in the habit of being more present, I like to start with the end in mind. So I know that certain people have mental things that they do or physical things, or they're trying to come to something more able to handle it. And I go back to the way I saw in my childhood, and then my first 30 years in corporate America, and then what I learned about the art and the science, and then now applying it in the last 10 years, you get a lot of traction out of setting it up properly in the first place. So, if we could talk for a minute, people's lives right now are impacted by all of those terrible meetings. And what I learned over those years is we know how to have high-performing meetings, and you can fix it today. Not an exaggeration. You don't even have to spend any more money. You don't have to do anything except follow the principles that you've probably heard about. You might have even had training. You might have hired somebody. I can tell you there are a few things that you can do right today to fix your meetings. And when I work with clients, they hear it, they love it, they try it. They say they would never want to go back to the old ways of meetings. And then pretty soon, everything reverts back. Why? Because our brains are involved and our brains are leading us every day, 99.999% of the day. So when we don't lead our brains, they go back to the thing they knew last week because that's easier and faster and safer. So those habits that we need to develop to change other things like exercise or eating or communication in a certain relationship. Our leadership day is all habits. How we do our meeting, those are habits. How we do presentations, those are habits. How we hold someone accountable or do performance management or launch a new product, those are all habits. So when you've tried something, you had a class, you brought in a consultant, you did a theory, and it didn't stick, it didn't take, oh, see, this stuff doesn't work. No, actually, you didn't change your habits. So the first thing I would do is follow the three or four principles that are the most important today to fix your meetings. And I have all this information on my website and I post every day on LinkedIn and I bring all this material forward. Once you do that, first of all, you won't have a calendar full of meetings. You should have a few meetings that are strategic and direct and targeted to help you meet your goals so you can go back and spend 2 hours doing the thing that is your thing to do. And so when you're doing that thing that is your thing to do, where you're in your genius zone, where you're in your flow, where you are, your education, your experience, your natural talents come together and you feel good about doing that, you're much more present, much calmer, much more ready to go into the next meeting. And when you go into the next meeting, because of the way it'll be structured, because of the way you show up and the other people show up, it doesn't feel like climbing a mountain. It feels like, oh, goody, I get to go talk to the people that are good at their things and I'm good at my thing. And let's do this because we're about to make some more happy happen and we're going to create more success. These meetings right now, they're costing companies. I did the math with a client recently, $5,000 for one meeting and two people did all the talking. The other 38 people were just there. $5,000, that was just 1 hour. Do the multiplication. And also, talented people leave. Those meetings are everybody's drudge. They're everybody, the bane of their existence. And everybody's just thinking, this is just how it is. No, actually, it's not. But this is the power of habits. We used to say strategy will eat your, our culture will eat your strategy for breakfast. Your habits, first of all, are your culture. Your habits are eating your strategy for breakfast. Your habits are eating your goals for breakfast. Your brain is so powerful. It has, but it autopilot is its favorite friend. Otherwise, every day you get up in the morning, you have to learn all that stuff again. How do I walk down the hall? How do I get a glass of water? How do I eat breakfast and get dressed? No, habits. But we can lead our habits and make those changes. You just got to do those steps. There are steps that you can do, and that is the art and science of the brain, the neuroscience that we've learned so much about in the last 20 years, and the art and science of humans and systems and dynamics and organizations that we all know, we just need to then learn it and practice it.
Exactly. It only becomes a habit once we practice, that's for sure.
And give feedback and be present to it. And then as you're doing that, address the areas that were getting in the way for why you didn't change it before. So these habits, yep, the brain will revert back. But if you've gone to a class and you learned a few things to change and you tried them and you really found it was successful and you really liked it, but then you go 6 months later and realize, hey, what happened to that? Well, you may not have identified the couple of things that were going to get in the way that were going to force you to revert back to the old ways, because all those people, it's their brains too, their habits too. So we methodically and systematically put processes and habits in place, and then we coach and we observe and we talk out loud. One of your greatest opportunities in organizations is to talk out loud about things. We're not talking about behavior at the workplace. We think that's weird, it's awkward, Leaders didn't get promoted because they're so good at talking about behavior. They got promoted because they have great sales, or their name was, they became popular or known. They ran a great business and sold it. They ran a great tiger team. They ran a team of people who put out a new product and it's really successful. So they promote that person into leadership where they're managing a budget and they're managing other leaders and they have no idea what to do. And here's what's happening at work. They can't say that. So I had a client who had a coach for a couple of years, and every week the client came out of those meetings feeling so good because they could have private conversations about how hard it is to be a leader in an organization. They weren't able to implement any changes. So for 2 years, they came out of those meetings feeling good. Nothing changed. They hadn't grown their leadership, but they had a place to go to admit to one other person to make themselves. To be seen that it's hard to be a leader when you haven't been given the tools and the processes to become good at that. So they're all secretly feeling challenged about certain aspects of it. They're even kind of wondering, why does this feel like I'm a preschool teacher? Why are people gossiping and complaining? Why are they coming to me to solve their problems? How is it that these are great experts in their fields? And they come to me to whine and complain about one of the other team members instead of having built collaboration or trust. So the leader, him or herself, doesn't even know how to do that, but we know how to do that. With the art and science of organizations, we know all that. So we just need to bring that to the people and then set up the culture, set up the habits for that, and remove the obstacles that are getting in the way and talk about it out loud. Okay. I recommended to this leader. A little bit of coaching I did with them after 2 years with this, which they continued that coach. I just recommended the conversations that they can have with their team today and their peers today and their leaders today. And that started making movement, being really honest about the important things. You don't have to hang out your dirty laundry or say everything that's going on in your life or call everybody on the last thing they just said. No, it's not that. It's boundaries and it's choosing those critical few. We should be talking openly about how that last meeting was really uncomfortable and we didn't do anything about it. We should be talking openly about the one person who always volunteers for things and never follows through. We're not talking about that openly. If you're not talking about that openly, there's a lot of things you're not being honest about. And so that's one of the things that we learn when we develop self-awareness and build team awareness is being able to talk out loud at work.
Exactly. I'm thinking back to one of the things you said, about people like maybe they were a super salesperson and they broke all the records and then they put them in management. They don't know what to do. And of course they don't, they're excited that they got a promotion, but they don't want to tell anyone that I don't know what to do,
That's
and
right.
then they're not feeling good anymore because they were at the peak feeling great.
Yes, which
Now
feels
they're
good
in,
to feel great. It feels
yeah,
good to feel great.
but now they're promoted, if you will, but they're promoted into something that they're not even happy doing because they don't have the skills. And so, having a place where people can actually voice that, say,
Yes.
hey, I'm really excited about this promotion, but I know how to sell, but I don't know what to do with these people. I mean, how do we get these people
And I
moving
was working
in the
with a
right
client.
direction?
I was working with a client who had that happen. And one of their first questions, because they're so savvy, one of their first questions was, okay, so what will my first 6 weeks be like? How does the company help me be an effective leader? And this is no joke, they handed them an onboarding checklist. And on that onboarding checklist were read these things and take this assessment. There was no interaction with anybody else. So that's onboarding is the that's the worst way that we're doing it. And I know a lot of people are doing it that way. One of the things we fix when we come into organizations is their onboarding becomes strategic and the right things to do to be able to fold people into the culture that you're setting up because you want it to be a certain way. The secret about leadership and getting promoted and being hired because you're somebody you worked with somebody before or you were known and you were known for what you do is each leader that comes into your organization, because we don't train leaders in a way that's working, because we don't develop leadership as a skill, they learned from their leaders. That's how they learned it. So everything they do, the way they know leadership was because of the leaders they had. And those leaders hadn't learned it either. And those leaders learned it from their leaders, and those leaders hadn't learned it either. And who are our first leaders? Anyone around when we're born. So I'm a youngest child of four. The adults in my household when I was born and all of my siblings were my leaders for the 17 years that I lived at home. Then I joined some sports and some music and theater. So those were my leaders. Then I went off and got a job at Burger King. I did. I got a job at Burger King. Those were my leaders. Let me tell you, that what 21-year-old who was my boss at Burger King had no idea what to do, none whatsoever. But I was learning from them. So then I took that learning and I went into my next jobs and all those learnings I took into corporate America. So now I'm in corporate America with a whole bunch of other people, and we all have a very similar way that we learned. And none of it is the art or science. And then you have these few people that pop up and they are naturals and they know the art and science because they have gone after it. They have studied it, they have read it, they have built their own self-awareness, did a lot of therapy, whatever it was that was their journey. And they just get swallowed up by the toxic pool of culture of a whole bunch of people who are making it up as they go along. And so, the way to develop a leader, well, first of all, if you're an individual right now listening and you're saying, oh no, how does this work then? First of all, it does work some. We know that because companies are making money and they're serving clients and people are offering services and products. They're muscling it through. And they're saying that the big problems that we have today, nothing we can do about them. Four generations in the workplace, post-COVID, remoter in person, diversity and inclusion. We know how critical it is to the bottom line and to all the people, and we don't know how to make it happen. Supply chain woes, the economy, all of these things people think can't do anything about them. Actually, you can't do anything about them for your own company because you're too mired in all of fighting the firefighting that you're doing and the crisis management because the leaders learned how to lead that way. Once you literally help yourself develop the ways to be your own influencer in a company to be able to at least have a healthy little bubble that you're in. And then once you learn how to be a leader, then you find out, wow, first of all, it's doable. And we're not talking about it, so they didn't know. It's doable. It just makes it so that you're going to want it to spread. So that's why I always start with the senior leader, the CEO, or the senior leader in a division and their leadership team. Because even though I'm a youngest child and I didn't love top down, I love everybody having all the decisions instead of me. But in this case, the structure, the culture, the what are we doing and who's supposed to be doing what, that starts at the top. The behaviors, the talking openly about behaviors, the working on the right behaviors for the culture we're setting, for the goals that we're going after, that starts with the senior leader and the leadership team. And once you start to work on it, and it's actually really fun, it gets to be fun. It gets to be energizing. You have fewer meetings. We do some assessments to help you have real conversations about who's good at what and how is it going. And you start to work together. That becomes energizing and fun. You start to be able to do the other things, the heavier lifting, because you've developed as a team, the heavier lifting to put in place systems and processes that are the right ones and shed the ones that aren't helpful. And pretty soon you find out, rather than feeling blamed, people leaders get feel blamed. So one of the reasons they keep it a secret is they think, I think I'm supposed to know this. I think I'm the only one who really doesn't feel comfortable leading, and I can't talk about it because I should. No, there's no shoulds. By the way, it's your brain. Your brain's doing it. Your brain doesn't know. So when we can lead your brain, put the systems and processes in place, give you practice, observe, some things will work and some things won't. And you'll try some more. Well, that's where we're re really developing your brain. You're going to lead your brain, and eventually, hopefully, you realize it was never about you. It's not a judgment. You didn't do something wrong. You just didn't know. And the goal for me for the world, because I think the world is a much better place when all the people in a company feel better because the leadership is doing better, and then they go out into the world and make the world a better place. When we're literally cascading this throughout the companies, people start to realize it is possible, and the cultures really do start to change. It's changing from the inside. People can talk about it openly. They can go after it openly, and then they have an opportunity to tackle supply chain woes and finally bring the people in to set up your company with the culture that you want. You haven't been able to do that because you're too busy having your leaders feel weird about not knowing things. We make it, it's not you. It's not you. And we're going to help you do the thing that you didn't know how to do because your brain didn't. And we're finally going to have you be the leader you always wished you could be.
Beautiful. And I was thinking as you were talking about, people just not knowing what to do in leadership and, and starting top down. So I'm in healthcare and I'm a specialist in my area. And the way I learned is I would sit in the room with that doctor when he was seeing patients and I would model him.
Of course,
I
yes.
modeled him. I watched everything he did.
Yes.
I heard everything he said to each person and I modeled him. And, I'm thinking that if you start with the top leaders and they're doing that, and then that person that feels like they don't know, but they don't want to tell anyone, but if that leader above them can say, hey, just follow me, just see what I'm doing and let them understand what to do, and they can model that. It seems like that would work even in corporate.
It does. And it is, and that's what you're talking about is what we know about neuroscience now. That being able to use all the skills that you just mentioned, all the sides of your body and brain to learn, that's how we learn. So to make the world a better place, I look forward to leaders in companies insisting that we have leaders who know how to lead the way we insist on our legal team went to law school, our chemist who's working on the recipe to get it to where it's safe, they have their education and they're learning the way you're just talking about. So we're really clear about how important it is to have people who know what they're doing. And then but then the company says, and all those leaders, they know how. It's fine. And the leader at the top knows that they don't know. And so they're cynically bringing on and letting people be leaders who are having to make it up as we go along. I think of it like after kindergarten all the way to 12th grade in the US. Pardon me. You've done your education, you get a high school diploma. That's what we call the high school diploma. And then they say, you are a teacher. I'm promoting you to be a teacher. Why? Well, you've been here. You know that your way around. You know what goes up on the walls in the classroom. You have no idea the art and the science behind it. And we would never do that because that's absurd. That's actually an absurd example, unless you think about how do we grow leaders. And that is really what we're doing, is we pluck them out of some situation and we say, I'm so glad that you have what it takes to be a leader. Here you go. And what you're talking about is the concept of apprenticeships and coaching and observing and modeling and then going back and reading and learning some more and then coming back and trying. And all of that is how we learn as adults. And so leaders in organizations, if they're not taking advantage of what you just described for how to help their leaders lead, then they're missing out on the way to lead a leader, to develop a leader. So if we want to talk about onboarding, you create an onboarding program for your company, and this is not necessarily just for leaders. We're just talking about onboarding for a new person. The first thing we do for onboarding is we leave them alone. And that's the opposite of what you want to do. You bring them into your fold and you hang out with them for 6 weeks, not an exaggeration. In 4 to 6 weeks of spending most of their time with you and the other leaders in their world, so much happens. They observe so much. You're modeling so much, and you're learning about them. And they're learning about you. And maybe after 4 to 6 weeks, they find, actually, this is not the department for me, or I don't even want to do this job. Why did I do all this schooling, or whatever it is? Or you find out for your company, they're probably not the right fit. Or for this team, they're probably not the right fit. Imagine the hundreds of thousands of dollars you could save if you spent time with new people. So go through a great hiring process. Have that be great too. Make sure that they know how to lead, or you're going to help them learn how to lead. But then when they're onboarding, spend time with them. The culture in your company right now is the culture that someone started, and then you just keep inheriting it. You can change the culture by bringing bringing people in and having them sit with you for a month or 6 weeks and really get let them get to know who we say we are, who what we're going after, what your role is in that, what your team's role is in that, and you can make some decisions about what happens after that. You do that, it's one of your greatest strategic assets. And most of the time, we leave everybody to fend for themselves. We leave everybody to fend for themselves, and then we force them to sit in meetings all day long that aren't getting us anywhere. So it's kind of an interesting dualism, is they're off by themselves or they're in those meetings that aren't getting anything done. We will do the third thing, which is get both of those fixed.
Exactly. And I was just thinking that, you know, if you're spending that time with the person, you're going to see what their strengths and weaknesses are. And everyone works better. They go into the flow when they're doing something they love and they're good at.
Absolutely.
So all of a sudden you're putting someone in this position, you realize, you know, they're not very good at it, or maybe they just like, I don't like doing this.
And when either one of you
place to go.
Yep. Mm-hmm. When either one of you figures that out, it's usually 1 or 2 years down the road. So 1 or 2 years down the road, somebody realizes that the person is not engaged, that they're not being productive, that they seem unhappy, or the person themselves realizes, oh, I, even though this is my livelihood, this is the field that I wanted to be in, I'm being present to myself and noticing that this is not great. Because after 2 years, they have these little moments that are poking at them because they can't ignore it anymore. In the first 4 weeks, if you're together, it all comes to light right away. Mm-hmm. You don't have to wait 2 years. Think of all the money that you can save and all of the morale and the effects on your success, your goals, your clients, the community, your other employees, when you figure all that stuff out early on. Mm-hmm. And then when people are able to understand what we're going after and who's doing what, and where do I fit? What I just described is on that short list that everybody needs. So that's how you develop as a leader, and that's how you develop a team. Everyone needs those things and a few more things. When you get that through the onboarding process, you haven't spent any more money. You haven't taken any more time. You have just redirected and repurposed some interactions to have it all done now, rather than waiting 2 years with all the missed opportunities and all of the unhappiness and lack of flow.
So I had a different question about actually communicating going up. So I have a friend that works in a multi-billion-dollar company. There's a C-suite and then there's him. So he's working with this C-suite people all the time. And he said, you know, one of this C-suite people, they're what they want to do and what we've been doing, it's not working. It's not working. We've got to change it. It's, you know, we just got to let him know. He said, we're just trying to figure out how we're going to communicate to him that he's doing it wrong because it's costing us money. But, you know, nobody wants to come directly out and say, you're wrong. So when it comes to communication, especially when it's going from someone with, I don't know if you'd call a lower position, but less responsibility position to someone who has a higher position, how do you make that safe or okay for them to communicate?
Yes. Well, first of all, if anybody remembers or people are still learning about or reading about this concept of managing up, you know, managing up, how did we ever get there? How did that become a thing? How did titles of books and classes and whole models and theories focus on managing up? It's kind of like telling the teenager in the household, it's on you now. Things aren't going well, and you're probably going to lose the house or get, you know, be evicted. It's on you. What are you going to do about it? So a couple of things when I work with clients. The first thing we do is stop the bleeding. So we got a track for stopping the bleeding. And it sounds like they're in a situation where there's some bleeding going on. And then we build the systems and processes in place so that it can be avoided in the future. And what's happening here is their system and their data and their behaviors are not giving them real information. So in Top Team Accelerator, I launched this to put all these pieces together because organizations need not a whole bunch of things, they need these things. And in the first pillar, it is teamwork. And that is really about the team being able to develop habits for open communication and noticing behaviors. So that when you're imperfect and you do gossip at some point, first of all, you've set the stage for no gossiping and you talk about it openly. You get to the point where when you're working through these processes, that it starts to become okay to have an open conversation about something that didn't go well. Nobody starts there unless the culture already had that in there. So while we're stopping the bleeding and we're dealing with this one issue that they have, which we'll get back to in a minute, you're building a system where it is safe and normal. It's normalized. It actually doesn't even have to feel good. Safety is not that it feels good. Safety is that people are used to it. No surprises. Your goal is always no surprises, so that when you have a surprise, you can deal with it. These leaders are dealing with fires every single day and they feel like everything's a surprise, which most of it isn't. So when a real surprise comes, like supply chain issues around the world, they're not equipped. They're too busy. They're too mired. So when you start to get in the habit of looking around and making sure, first of all, everybody's clear where you're headed. So none of these boats rowing off in different directions, those are habits and those are lack of awareness of what's really happening. So people are being able to go off and be in silos, not okay. You can't be in silos. You cannot be in silos and be a high-performing team. You cannot be in silos and be a high-performing whole organization. So, but we don't start there, because if we say today we're hiring Margie and we're gonna break down our silos, that will never work. So there's these little steps that start first. And eventually, as you move through the pillars of Top Team Accelerator, you have started to have open conversations about the things that you put a structure in place to improve. So one of the first things we say is we are not going to gossip and complain. We are not going to go back to our teams and say things. We're going to talk about their issues here. But the first thing we do is, what are the leaders' goals? And can everybody recite that in an elevator for 30 seconds? Is everybody saying the same thing to their own teams about where they're going? And then for each member and each team, what are we going after? What is our part? What is my part? Do I have everything I need? And do I know how it's going? So my leader, my supervisor, my C-suite executive, do I know what they think every week about what I'm doing? That shouldn't be a quarterly conversation or an annual conversation. And it certainly shouldn't be a fun conversation that isn't real. Oh, my manager loves me. My manager said, and then you find out later, wow, they don't think I'm doing the work. They don't realize the obstacle I have. I can't even talk to them about it because I'm so busy managing up. So once you put those conversations and habits in place, then you look at your data and your metrics and how do we monitor and how do we tell the story of what's happening? Now, this person can't change the C-suite executive. They can't, and they shouldn't have to. Managing up should not be their job. They have to get through their day. So they have to think about how to deal with this C-suite person. But they shouldn't have the burden of the outcomes of the C-suite person's feelings, their perception of whatever. So in the right now, the first few questions I would ask this leader is, well, what do they already know? What were their expectations for how something was going to go? And where in the process can you tweak the way they get their information so that they have more of a feedback loop about their own interactions or their own outcomes? It may not be safe to do that. Some people have to get off the bus. You know, some people, if your leader is the issue, and you've tried some things and you have no influence on whether they want to do something like, let's build a leadership development program that we don't have right now. Let's have more authentic conversations. Let's start using metrics that tell the real story and we all know what they mean and we all can talk about them openly. If they're not open to that, then you may have to look at what your options are. But if you feel comfortable introducing data and conversations and interactions to be able to let that leader find out for themselves where it's working for them and where there needs to be something different. And then if there's no option to do that, then you're making the most of what you can in your own little world as a leader. It's unfortunate. I worked at a company one time who each of the C-suite executives was a savant in their field. These were people who were, interviewed for magazines. They were all celebrities, really. And they had no connection to each other whatsoever. So they're leading these big divisions, and they have all of these team members, 2,000 team members in one division, 1,500 in another. And it's like these divisions are separate companies because the C-suite is not going to interact as a team. And people will say, oh, that's okay. It actually is not okay. But you don't even have the conversations and the metrics set up to know where that's impacting your bottom line. This was a public company. The people on the street, your shareholders, your teams internally, your community members. Nobody's making the connection that how they are interacting in silos is affecting everybody else. The data, the metrics should be telling them that, rather than some leader who's good at knowing the C-suite person should make some changes and then has to have it on their back to see if it can happen.
Well, you have given us great, amazing advice on this and some new ideas and just kind of open things up. So thank you so much for that. And I was just wondering if people wanted to work with you, who are the people that work with you, or is it the actual CEOs that would contact you?
CEO, yep, CEO and their leadership team, or that C-suite executive and their leadership team, the head of a division and their leadership team. And people can go to topteamaccelerator.com and take a free assessment. Just click on the button. It doesn't give me your email or anything. You just take the assessment and get an idea for the first of all, as you're answering the questions in the assessment, you're getting an idea of what things really are the most important to focus on first. When you have those pieces in place, you're building what I'm talking about. So you can click on that button. So it's topteamaccelerator.com. Click on that button to take the free assessment. And also there's a button on there to take you to our website. And there's a lot of resources on there. You can fix your meetings today, and everyone should. And I'm on LinkedIn, Margie.Olson, Olson, and I put free resources out there each day. And then I would like to leave people with, just because they don't think it's possible because they haven't seen it in front of them, I promise you, it is possible. It does happen. There is an art and a science. It just hasn't been on your radar. You can make this happen even without admitting to a whole bunch of people that you don't feel comfortable. You can make this happen for your team. And we will do assessments, we will do activities, we will do offsites, and we will build systems and processes that will start to feel really natural.
That's awesome. Well, now I have a personal question for you.
Ah.
What gives you the most happiness and fulfillment in your life at this point?
Two things. So I have five grandchildren and three adult children and their partners and life. But they are, it is amazing that love. It makes every day the right day. So it's that. And also, it was one of my adult kids who pointed out that I like when things get better. And then I've read, that's a reformer. That's someone who, so I'm always so honored when I see something that someone, the light bulb went off, or they were able to change, even if it's their meetings, when they change their meetings and they're so happy about it, that makes me happy.
Well, thank you. Thanks for being on the podcast today and sharing all your wisdom and which, your enthusiasm for what you do and your passion just shines through. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was really nice to meet you.
So I have one last question.
Yes.
What is your best advice on living an incredible, amazing life?
I think it's about living out loud. And you may not be able to do that today. You may have to untangle some things, and you may have to end some partnerships, and you may have to go to therapy, do more meditation, get that exercise routine that you said you were going to do, give up the work that you're doing and do something else. When you get to the point where you're throughout the day, you don't even have to wonder what you said last week because it's all authentic. You're not blabbing a whole bunch of extra things, but you're just feeling really clear coming from you and saying the things that mean something to you, and it's authentic. You sleep better, you age slower, your work is 100,000 times better. It's just a better life. I wouldn't want to do a life anymore without feeling like I can just show up as me and be authentic. That's a great life.
Thank you so much, Margie. We'll talk to you again soon.
That's great. Take care.